Tommy McNeil. Hundreds of Islamic State fighters and family members fled the northeastern Syrian village of Aghuz, taking advantage of a pause in ferocious fighting with the U.S.-backed forces that have surrounded the last patch of the terror group's self-declared caliphate. Officials with the Syrian Democratic Forces, Kurdish militias, and human rights monitors confirmed the exodus late Monday, though the number of fighters and civilians varied. Monitors with the London-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said that about 150 IS fighters surrendered to the SDF, part of a group of about 400 people that left the ever-shrinking enclave on the banks of the Euphrates River. The observatory said by the end of the day, as many as another 1,200 people had left. The Trump administration is being criticized by members of both major political parties for its response to the killing of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi at Saudi Arabia's consulate in Turkey last October. The administration is accused of defying a law requiring it to investigate and identify those responsible for the dissident Saudi reporter's death. News reports have said that CIA concluded that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman ordered the execution of Khashoggi, a Washington Post reporter who wrote critically about the Saudi government. No intelligence officials were present for the closed-door briefing on Monday, causing multiple senators to their tempers to flare. Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives launched a wide-ranging investigation Monday of President Trump's 2016 campaign, his businesses, his transition to power, and whether as president he has obstructed justice to thwart any probes of him. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn says that Attorney General William Barr has checked with ethics officials. This is VOA News. And again, AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
Some Democrats have raised concern the new attorney general might upend Robert Mueller's investigation. They cite a memo that he sent to administration officials criticizing the probe into alleged campaign collusion with Russia and whether President Trump had obstructed justice. William Barr has downplayed that memo, saying it shouldn't be viewed that he's prejudged the investigation.
That's AP's Jackie Quinn reporting. Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido returned to his country Monday after flouting a court-imposed travel ban by touring Latin America countries to boost support for his campaign to tighten regional pressure on President Nicolas Maduro. Guaido greeted thousands of supporters at an opposition rally at a plaza in a district after arriving at Caracas International Airport just hours earlier. Guaido calls Maduro a usurper and says his presidency is illegitimate. After he secured re-election last year in a vote widely considered a sham, Maduro retains control of state institutions and the apparent loyalty of senior figures in the armed forces. The government has jailed dozens of opposition leaders and activists for seeking to overthrow Maduro through violent street demonstrations in 2014 and 2017. Alabama authorities are searching for survivors after powerful tornadoes swept through the southern U.S. state Sunday, killing at least 23 people. Local authorities said that at least two tornadoes touched down during an outbreak of severe weather across the southeast. The death toll could rise as rescue teams search through the debris. A local sheriff said Monday that dozens of people are still missing. A county coroner said the dead include mostly or almost entire families and at least three children. And as AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports, the president has responded, saying that the federal government will help.
The president tweets he has personally told FEMA to give the A-plus treatment to the great state of Alabama and the wonderful people devastated by the tornadoes. He says Governor Kay Ivey's been told and that she's working closely with both FEMA and him.
That's AP correspondent Sagar Magani reporting. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is expressing optimism that trade talks with China aimed at ending tariffs on hundreds of billions of dollars worth of products will be successful. The top U.S. diplomat in Iowa to discuss diplomatic efforts to promote American economic interest and American exports. Iowa's farmers have been hit hard by the U.S.-China trade feud. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back. morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. One of former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's sons has been arrested and jailed.
They are linked to the alleged missing $16 billion. Government is saying that they criminally printed an amount unknown to them, which of course is not legal.
Betty Johnson Umbayo is the senior reporter for Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper. A Zimbabwe female member of parliament charged with treason goes to court today, Tuesday. Zambia suspends the license of a private television station. And the Burundian opposition leader says his party is ready to challenge President Pierre Nkurunziza despite efforts to stifle it.
The power of freedom is more than anything. When people are determined to get free, they get free, whatever the cost this should be.
Agathon Rwasa is the leader of the opposition National Congress for Freedom Party. Telephone rates are going up in South Sudan, and we'll look at steps Uganda is taking to mark World Wildlife Week. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian authorities have arrested and jailed one of former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's sons, Charles Sirleaf, and two other Central Bank of Liberia officials for their alleged involvement in what authorities are calling criminal conspiracy, economic sabotage, and illegal disbursement and expenditure of public money. Journalist Betty Johnson Umbayo is senior reporter for Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper.
Early yesterday morning, three of the five that are charged with criminal facilitation, criminal conspiracy, and misuse of public funds were taken to the court. They were all handcuffed. Yes, they are linked to the alleged missing $16 billion. The government is saying that they criminally printed an amount unknown to them, which of course is not legal.
Liberians have been talking about this money, this so-called $15 billion, for some time now. How did Weeks and Mr. Sirleaf, how did they plead?
Well, let's say yesterday was not really a formal court proceeding. It was their first appearance, which, of course, they were served a writ of arrest. They were charged on economic sabotage, misuse of public money, disbursement and expenditure of public, and criminal conspiracy. The court said that they were free to file their bonds as per what the law provides, but then the cash attached to the bond was too much, which is over $5 Liberian dollars, and no insurance company could somehow secure their bonds. So currently, as we speak, they spend their first night at the Moravia Central Prison.
Betty, do the arrest of Mr. Weeks and Mr. Sirleaf, would these two arrests resolve the mystery surrounding the so-called missing $15 billion?
Well, for that, I can say no, because we have like five persons charged so far, which of course we have currently three. And I'm told one returned to Liberia yesterday and the other is still on the run, I'm told. But as far as we are concerned as journalists, this have not gone anywhere yet. We are told that more names are up, which, of course, we don't know when they will be arrested. But many people are calling for Samuel Twe, Nathaniel Patrick, who is the current central bank governor, to somehow be arrested because they are also linked to this same money, including the money that was reportedly used by the central bank to mop up the economy.
Betty, Charles Sirleaf is the son of former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Has the former president made any public statement so far about the arrest of her son?
No, James. But during the entire court proceeding, a brother of Charles James Sirleaf was in court, and as soon as his brother was being taken to the central prison, you could see that he just not in rejection.
Generally, what are Liberians saying about this whole $15 billion issue?
Now, I can inform you that across the streets of Monrovia, you hear people calling for Minister Samuel Twe, to be investigated because he masterminded the stealing of the $25 million, which of course he called a mop-up exercise. And civil society are now quiet somehow because they are still reading through the two investigative reports.
Betty, thank you very much again. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, James.
Betty Johnson Umbayo is a senior reporter for Liberia's front page Africa newspaper. She was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday extended by 1 year sanctions against Zimbabwe, saying the policies of President Emmerson Mnangagwa continue to pose an unusual and extraordinary threat to U.S. foreign policy. Meanwhile, in Zimbabwe, a member of parliament, Joanna Mamombe, the first woman to be charged with treason in Zimbabwe, is going to court today, Tuesday, to learn whether she will be set free or her arrest will be upheld. She was charged with attempting to overthrow the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa after asking her constituents to support anti-government protests.
In court today, Joanna Mamombe made her initial appearance before the magistrate. We challenged the lawfulness of her arrest and also challenged her placement on remand. We made submissions. Four witnesses testified with respect to the legality of the arrest and the lawfulness of the remand sought by the state. The court said it will make a determination on those objections tomorrow morning at 11:15 a.m.
So what were the heads of your arguments?
Firstly, that the arrest was not proper in the sense that there was a standing arrangement with the police for Joanna Mamombe to surrender herself to the police on Sunday. So there is really no explanation why they then went to pick her from where she was actually attending parliamentary business. And then secondly, that she was not informed of the reasons of her arrest upon arrest. In court today, the arresting detective struggled to tell the court the reasons why he arrested her. If he struggled in that manner in court today, it would automatically follow that even at the time of arrest, he did not know why he was placing her under arrest. He was just acting on instructions from we do not know who. And then the third reason for the challenge was that she was brought to court after 48 hours had expired. The police officer told the court that he arrested around 8 a.m. on Saturday. So the 48-hour period expired at 8 a.m., by which time she had not yet been brought before a magistrate. She was only brought before a magistrate close to an hour later, around 9 a.m. And for that reason, the 48-hour period had already elapsed. And then finally, when we looked at the facts that have been put to her, they do not disclose an offense at all. And in addition, the investigating officer also failed to justify the basis upon which he was seeking Joanna Mamombe's placement on remand.
What are the charges that she is facing?
She's facing a charge of subverting a constitutional government. In essence, they are saying she tried to overthrow the government through unconstitutional means.
The lawyer for Zimbabwe Member of Parliament, Joanna Mamombe, speaking with Gibbs Dubé of VOA Zimbabwe Service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 5th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. The leader of Burundi's opposition National Congress for Freedom Party says supporters will not be deterred in carrying out political activities across the country aimed at defeating President Pierre Nkurunziza in next year's election. Agathon Rwasa, a prominent member in the Burundian parliament, says his newly registered party has broad appeal despite what he claims are efforts by officials in the Nkurunziza administration to undermine opposition groups. Rwasa's remarks came after the mayor of Bujumbura prevented his party from holding planned campaign activities in Bujumbura, citing security concerns.
I think what has been done by the mayor cannot stop us doing our business. We are meant to be preparing for next elections. So we have to make some activities throughout the country. And we think we must go on with our program. All what we need is to help Burundi achieve some change and Burundians to enjoy their freedom as citizens. And we can do this only by doing our politics according to the law which are there in Burundi. We have to respect the law, and we want the law to protect us.
But you said the refusal of the mayor of Bujumbura to allow you to carry out your new political party activities. Some are saying that this is a security issue and you should appreciate it and be grateful of his action to prevent your supporters from possible harm due to the security concerns.
I do understand your hypothesis, but if there would have been some concerns in terms of security, he would have told us what kind of concerns there were, but he didn't. And yet, we cannot believe that it was some real threat on security, because other political parties were doing their business in the same area of Bujumbura the day when he said that we couldn't. This is to mean that it is just a kind of political protectionism that is being implemented by the administration, which is mostly dominated, even not 100% dominated by the CNDD-FDD.
What do you think your new party prospects are ahead of next year's election?
First of all, we have the support of the population, and we are also confident that many a Burundian, even in the ranks of the CNDD-FDD, need the change. And we think that we have enough support from the population, and this has been demonstrated in last referendum, and we are sure that come next year when elections are there, Burundians will make the difference with what have been there from 2005, and they will mark the change in the governance of Burundi to give hope to the people of Burundi that we can move forward and not just be stuck as this has been happening from some time.
But Mr. Rwasa, a lot of Burundians that I spoke with are saying incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza is simply unbeatable. And what do you think are your realistic chances of defeating him in next year's election?
You know, the power of freedom is more than anything. When people are determined to get free, they get free, whatever the cost this should be. And I'm sure that threatening people cannot help this country move forward. And people need change. And when the time for change is there, nobody can refrain to change to happen.
Agathon Mraza is the leader of the Opposition National Congress for Freedom Party of Burundi. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from Bujumbura. In Zambia, a spokesman for the Opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, is accusing the government of President Edgard Lungu of silencing independent voices in the country. This after the Zambian Independent Broadcasting Authority on Monday suspended the license of the privately owned Prime TV for being biased and unprofessional. The authorities ordered the station to conduct what they called in-house training and basic journalism ethics and news writing during the suspension. UPND spokesman Charles Kakoma says the suspension of Prime TV is politically motivated because the station had been providing coverage to the opposition in a country where the government has a monopoly over the media.
As the opposition, United Party for National Development, we think that this is politically motivated because there have been calls in the last few weeks from senior ruling party officials, including the Secretary General of the ruling party, Mr. Davis Miller, and the Minister of Information, that they must discipline the Prime Television Station for what they called sensational reporting about the opposition and the political violence that took place in a parliamentary by-election in the western part of the country, where they attempted to assassinate the president of the UPND, President Hakainde Hichilema. And that television station carried the footage of that event, where police used live ammunition to shoot at the gathering where Hakainde Hichilema was. And that has upset the ruling party, and hence they are ordering Independent Broadcasting Authority to suspend the license. Basically, they don't want to hear alternative views. They don't want to have a free press. They are basically stifling media freedoms in Zambia. They have been doing that for a long time now, and they're trying to make them submit to their whims. But because the broadcasting station stood their ground, so they tried just to suspend their license.
What do you make of the fact that some reports are saying the station, the television station, has been openly critical of the government?
Well, what the station has been doing is to give the opportunity to the opposition also to tell their side of the story. Because the major television station here is owned by the government, and the opposition has been blacked out. So this private television station has been offering an opportunity to the opposition to be aired. And that is what has annoyed the ruling party and its government, and hence the decision to suspend their broadcasting license.
I don't understand the broadcasting authority. They're saying that during the suspension period, the station is expected to conduct in-house training in basic journalism, ethics, and news script writing. What does that have to do with the suspension?
That is surprising, and it's not making sense to many people, because the station has employed qualified journalists, some of them with degrees in journalism. So I don't know what type of training again that the government wants, but basically that is a scapegoat. All they want is to instill fear in this television station so that even when they reopen, they'll stop carrying stories independently and fairly.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development. You're speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. South Sudan's telecom regulatory body, the National Communication Authority, has increased by 40% local and international telephone call rates in a bid to boost the sector. A public notice issued last week by the Director General of the National Communication Authority said the higher rates will go into effect this Thursday, March 7th. But as Winnie Cirino reports from Juba, South Sudanese are complaining about the increased tariffs and the poor telephone network.
There are only two telecom operators in South Sudan, MTN and Zain. Right now, subscribers pay 3.15 SSP to call a number on the same network, while a subscriber pays 3.85 SSP if they call on a number on a different network. These tariffs are being increased by 40%, so in a few days, a subscriber will pay 4.95 SSP to call a number on the same network, while a subscriber will pay 6.05 SSP when they call a number on another network. In the recent public notice, Laduwani Kenyi, the Director General of the National Communication Authority, says the decision to increase tariffs is based on the depreciation of the South Sudanese pounds against the US dollar. He says the increments are necessary to safeguard the availability of services in the country. Many Juba residents say they are outraged over the increase. Juba resident Wilson Odoch calls the higher tariffs harassment of ordinary citizens who must hustle to get money to buy airtime.
If they are raising it, then you should raise it with bits, not once and for all. Not 40%, they should start by 10%, gradual increase.
Dan Koch, another Juba resident, says he believes communication will be very hard once the new tariffs come into effect. He says he worries other companies will soon increase the cost of commodity and service they supply if they get the impression that the government allows companies to charge the prices they want. Koch calls on the government to set up a state-run mobile phone operator to serve its citizens rather than depending on foreign telephone companies that are in the country to make profits at the expense of the citizens.
People were living in South Sudan for quite a long time without this communication network. And so it will even be better that people even go back to their long-range radio call.
The public notice states that the mobile network operators should immediately embark on improving network coverage and quality of service, and that the increment in the tariffs of local traffic should be adjusted gradually, starting in March to reach the maximum cap in July 2019. Rajab Mohandis, executive director for the Organization for Responsive Governance, says when the civil society activists petitioned the National Communication Authority on poor network, they were told charges would be increased so that the telephone companies can improve their services. Mohandis also urges the government to make decisions that favor the interest of its citizens.
The National Communications Authority should provide reliable information to the South Sudanese citizens. What citizens are getting is only information from the telecom companies, and they do not know what the government has done to reach this agreement.
Ahmed Asin, marketing manager for Zain, declined to comment, saying the telephone companies are answerable to the National Communication Authority only. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
This week is World Wildlife Week, an event that celebrates the many beautiful and varied forms of wild fauna and flora and raises awareness of the multitude of benefits that conservation provides to people. Conservationist Lele Ajarova, who leads tourism in Uganda, says wildlife continues to face threat from humans. Mugumi Davis Rakarinji reports from Kampala.
The sound of birds and chimpanzees welcome you as you enter Chebale Forest National Park of Western Uganda. The rainforest is home to a variety of flora and fauna. Big mammals such as elephants, buffaloes, antelopes, birds and reptiles live here. Godfrey Bariasima, the park's head warden, says the forest has 13 different primate species, some only found in Uganda.
We have black and white colobus. We have the gray-cheeked manga bee, Ugandan manga bee, because they found it very unique. And then we have lowest. A lowest monkey is a terrestrial monkey. It doesn't stay up in the trees, just on the ground. And it is also there. And we have a blue monkey, a velvet monkey, and the olive baboon.
But he says this park is commonly famous for the chimpanzees, which scientists claim have more than 97% of man's DNA. Guide Alex Tudiatunga says indeed, chimps behave like humans in a way.
So they can tell each call of their own. So they've had a friend. If it is an enemy group, there is a way they also become nervous. Sometimes they can go to attack or they just retreat.
But these animals face challenges mainly resulting from the human interference, such as poaching, says Lile Ajelova, the head of Ugandan Tourism Board. Besides poaching, many forests, home for the wildlife, have been cut, leaving animals with less space to live in and not enough food to feed on.
In Uganda, but I don't believe it is just in Uganda, but it's all over Africa. It's the biggest problem. Why? Because wildlife has lost a lot of their habitat, and there's a lot of interface between humans and wildlife right now. And I would say it's the biggest challenge for wildlife conservation.
She says animals that face more threats are those outside protected areas like national parks and game reserves, as protection is usually left with local authorities who have less expertise and resources. At Vigodi Village, just about 4 kilometers from Chivale National Park, John Tinker has set a home in which he accommodates tourists, local and foreign.
Without wildlife, I wouldn't have this business here. It's because of wildlife that tourists come into this community, see chimps and the other primates in the forest, and then they need a place to stay. And some of them now are taking interest in staying in communities. And the money I get here is around 10 million Uganda shillings a month.
Mugumi Davis Rakarinshi reporting from Kampala, Uganda. And that is it for this Tuesday, March 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I'm Lenore Moudou, host of Health Chat. Tuesday on Health Chat, we will discuss rare diseases, a group of disorders that affect about 350 million people around the world and are difficult to diagnose. Our guest is Chika Dunio, Director of Education Programs with the U.S. National Organization for Rare Disorders. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.